Welcome to the Bill Barnwell Show. I'm Bill Barnwell of ESPN. We are here on a Friday, March 16th, 2018. It's the beginning of a new NFL league year. And fortunately, everybody waited to sign all those critical free agents until the league year started, like good boys and girls around the NFL. But a lot of signings to get to, a lot of discussion to have, and joining me to do all that is CBS's Will Brinson. Will, how are you?
I'm doing well, Bill. I'm glad that we're sort of getting to the end of the craziness. I love free agency because it's just so absurd, and the level of rumor mongering and the speed at which people move around the league, and the absurdity of the contracts that get handed out, and then the double absurdity of the actual contract that is given after we hear the what we think is handed out. But by Friday, when it's a full week of it, I'm sort of tired. I'll be honest. I mean, like I'm ready for free agency to hit that second wave.
Yeah, we're hitting that final day in Vegas vibe here with free agency, where it's like we're good. Adding trades this year complicated things. Add a little extra oomph to free agency. But we'll get to some of those moves. We'll get to a lot of the major signings. But of course, I think the obvious place starts with the biggest signing in free agency. The first, as far as I know, and granted there are workout bonuses, but we can ignore them just for the purposes of saying this is a fully guaranteed contract for Kirk Cousins. 3 years, $82.5 million. He goes from Washington to Minnesota. What do you think about let's start with the economic side of this. What do you think about the fully guaranteed nature of this deal? How does it change things? Not really for Kirk Cousins, because you know he's going to get paid either way, but do you think it changes things for the league and the players around the league going forward?
I don't think it's going to change it that much. Mm-hmm. Now, it's great that somebody decided to go fully guaranteed, because at some point, if NFL players, and it's a weird catch-22 for him, Bill, because if NFL players want to maximize their monetary value and grow their contracts in reality and to get those silly NBA contracts, they have to go to fully guaranteed deals. Mm-hmm. But in order to do that, a lot of players are going to have to take some humble pie in terms of what their contract says that they're making. And even more importantly, a lot of agents are going to have to agree. Yeah. And that's why it's just never going to happen. These agents are working for the players, but are essentially working in concert with the owners, not on purpose, but by driving up the perceived value of these contracts with bogus years, dummy years, the value of a contract that's not the actual guaranteed value of the contract. Mm-hmm. It ultimately ends up hurting their clients, but they have to do it because it helps them get more clients, and it's such a piranha filled industry that good luck being the do-gooder who takes a step backwards.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, it does seem like, you know, like the Nigel Bradham deal, which was a 5-year, $40 million contract, which, when you break it down, might just be a 1-year, $6 million contract. That 5 years, $40 million, it's going to make the agent sound good. It's going to make the player feel good that he got this massive contract, even if he necessarily knows in the back of his mind that, well, it's not actually a 5-year, $40 million deal. But it's certainly an interesting opportunity. I mean, Mike McCartney, Kirk Cousins' agent, is someone who's been around the league for a long time. So hopefully it's a thing where he says, okay, well, look at all this money I got my client, which is actual money that's going to be in his pocket. Maybe he does that, but I don't think you can do it as the new guy. And I think you have to be someone who, like Kirk Cousins, who already has about $50 million or $45 million in the bank from those two franchise tags. I think you can maybe sort of evolve where, once you get that first tag, it seems like Kirk Cousins started thinking about this. When you get that second tag, then you feel like, okay, well, if I hit free agency, then I can get this. But I just don't think if you're Odell Beckham and you have, $10 million from that rookie deal, I don't think you can sit there and say, okay, well, I'm not going to take a long-term contract. I'm going to wait 3 years and go to year and hope I don't get injured. And then I'm going to end up in free agency, because it just, the attrition rate is so high in this league that, I just think unless you are a quarterback who already has money in the bank, and I think it'll happen for those guys, but nobody else, it's just so tough to stay healthy and stay productive for a long period of time.
Yeah, and the other thing about a quarterback deal that sort of gets lost in all of this is that if you're a quarterback, and let's say you're an above-average quarterback, right? Mm-hmm. We've seen it happen, I guess, with Andy Dalton, for example, signs a – you have the Jay Cutler contract, and then you have the Andy Dalton contract, or the Ryan Tannehill contract. these option type of contracts. Well, if you're an above average quarterback, you're not going to not see that money. I mean, you're gonna see most of the money anyway, you know, 75% of the time. And certainly the instance of Colin Kaepernick, you know, independent of whatever happened, you know, with him, you know, kneeling and now
right.
unable to get a job, you know, he probably didn't see all that money, but most of the time these quarterbacks are going to get the full value of the contract. I do think it will be interesting to see what somebody like Aaron Rodgers does, whether he tries to negotiate a fully guaranteed deal as someone who is already on a roster.
Mm-hmm.
And you're right. I mean, you know, it comes down to it. Like with Odell Beckham, you have X number of earning shots in the NFL, and you have to take those. You can't, Le'Veon Bell's sort of doing it, I guess, by mm-hmm. holding out to improve the running back market, but it's hard to be a hero in the NFL when negotiating a contract and you want to get paid.
Yeah, it really is. And I think just the only position where guys don't get hurt frequently enough who have that sort of slow career path, that slow aging curve, are going to be quarterbacks. So I do think Aaron Rodgers is going to have that option at this point to go out and ask for $95 million over 3 years, fully guaranteed, if he wants that opportunity. But now, of course, with Kirk Cousins, he is going to be a Minnesota Viking. And as an on-field fit, I mean, I do think he's an upgrade on Case Keenum, but this is sort of complicated. How can I phrase this? I think he's an upgrade on the typical season we could expect from Case Keenum, but I don't know that he's an upgrade on the guy we saw in Minnesota last year, just because I think we got a really impressive season from Case Keenum. And I think Kirk Cousins, I mean, if he plays that well, the Vikings are going to be in great shape. And I think he's certainly more likely to play that well than Case Keenum would be, but I just don't think you're going to get, you know, Kirk Cousins throwing the football all over the field and the Vikings scoring 35 points a game.
Yeah, the Vikings weren't built on the concept of the Vikings and mm-hmm. Mike Zimmer's team is inherently not a gunslinging, pile up the points type of team. I mean, you can almost see the disgust in Mike Zimmer's, or hear the disgust in his, sort of see it on his face when he was talking about quarterbacks, you know, recently at the combine in his press conference and saying, you know, we can't get away from what we do. Like, quarterbacks are great and all, but I mean, we can't. He wants to be a running team. I think he'd love to get 16 games out of Dalvin Cook. Mm-hmm. And it'll be interesting to see how they sort of, you know, blend Kirk Cousins' style, which, you know, he's thrown the ball a lot over the last few years with those receivers. Now, certainly on paper, I think when you add Kirk Cousins to this offense, if he plays the way he's played the last few years and puts up those stats, and you combine it with the defense, and you combine it with those skill position guys, Dak Cook, as I mentioned, Kyle Rudolph, Stephon Diggs, Adam Thielen. I mean, that's a really nice core of skill position guys.
For sure.
You add him to that, and you have an offense to cook with gas, but is it necessary?
Right.
And the Keenum thing that you pointed out, what was so big for him is that he was taking up a minuscule amount of the salary cap space. Mm-hmm. And so you could allocate resources to other things, namely a defense or a running game, when you don't have to spend on that quarterback. And it will be interesting to see how the Vikings, particularly with an inability to spread sort of the cap hit, you know, into these dummy years. I mean, you're going to have to take on a pretty sizable cap hit for Kirk Cousins each of the 3 years, how it affects their ability to allocate resources for defense and for the running game.
Yeah, I mean, he's 24, 29, 31 each of the next 3 years. So, I mean, you can't really hide that. And then next year, so many free agents coming up for the Vikings. Stephon Diggs, Eric Kendricks, Anthony Barr, Daniel Hunter. Those are four young superstar caliber players in this league. So I don't know if they're going to be able to keep all those guys. And granted, I'd rather have a great quarterback than keep those four guys and have a zero at quarterback. But it's going to be really interesting. And this is not a guaranteed success. But I think a move the Vikings had to make, just given the opportunity to sign really one of the best quarterbacks to ever hit the free agent market. Another quarterback who hit the free agent market a while ago, almost at the free agent market this year, according to reports, is Drew Brees, who ended up taking a 2-year, $50 million deal to go back to New Orleans that were obviously maybe complicated by Tom Benson's failing health, which he ended up passing away yesterday. But Drew Brees reportedly, and again, who knows if this is true, but reportedly was told, we're going to offer you $50 million over 2 years, take it or leave it. And if you want to go above that, you can hit the free agent market. Does that seem crazy to you?
It seems a little crazy. It's crazy like a fox, I guess, because it worked. But
yes.
The Saints went to Drew Brees and Tom Condon who, if I were picking out two people with Peyton Manning now retired, two people that are going to take you for every last penny in a good way. I don't mean that as an insult by any stretch. Two people who are going to maximize their leverage and do what's best for NFL players as a whole, the quarterback market as a whole, and their own wallets, it would be Drew Brees and Tom Condon. Like, I don't want to be in a negotiating room against those two guys. According to reports, Mickey Loomis talked to Drew Brees away from Condon, which is terrifying. But they played on Drew Brees' heartstrings and his loyalty and perhaps a reticence to move at the age of 39 with three boys when he's the face of a city. And it worked, and they got him for a below-market deal, and I can't believe it happened. I thought he would more aggressively flirt with other opportunities, whether it was, you know, whether Minnesota was an opportunity, I don't know. Arizona, potential there, certainly. Denver, maybe. Yeah. I guess at the end of the day, I sort of see how if you're Drew Brees, and I mean, look, I don't have the money that Drew Brees has or the physical talent, but we're both like, you know, 5'11".
I was going to say, you're both the same height.
Yeah, we're both like 5'11". I'm cheating with 5'11" too. But we're both like short mid 30s dads whose last name end in BR, right? I mean, that's something. So I wouldn't want to up and move if I didn't have to. If I was comfortable in New Orleans, knowing he's got a short time left in his career, knowing I think so badly would love to get a second Super Bowl for that city because of what it would do for the city, for his legacy, for how people perceive him and Sean Payton. And I think he looks at this team and this roster and says, I've got a window, and ultimately was just, you know, maybe didn't have as big a market as we thought outside New Orleans and just said, okay, you know, give me your best offer. And the Saints kind of knew he was going to take it and gambled correctly in that game of chicken. And it worked out well because they got a Hall of Fame quarterback in his final years on a below market deal.
Can you imagine, though, if Drew Brees had been like, I'm good. Yeah, I'm going to go to the Broncos. I'll be fine. See you guys later. And then the Saints were sitting there with – and the reports came out that they weren't willing to go to $26 million. They weren't willing to spend an extra $1 million to keep Drew Brees in town. That would have been insane.
And even making matters worse is they would have taken an $18 million dead cap hit. Because Brees left, like, if they had signed him after the league year started, which would have been even – that would have been sort of the most annoying thing because they would have signed him and taken the cap hit. But, they, you know, they worked it out. If he leaves – if you're Arizona – that's why if I was Arizona or Minnesota, I would have made an aggressive offer at Brees just to force the Saints to come up a couple million and needed some more cap and or put them in danger of losing Brees with that $18 million cap hit. Because I don't think, barring a trade-up for another quarterback, they're really competitive next year. I mean, I guess they'd be good. But, I mean, with that cap hit and Brees gone, that would be a devastating loss for the Saints.
Yeah. Well, you know who they could have got for $20 million, just $5 million less than Drew Brees, somehow, because the NFL is a weird place, is Sam Bradford, who signed a one-year $20 million deal with the Arizona Cardinals to take over as their starting quarterback. And I don't know. I mean, I thought Sam Bradford was fine in 2016. He was good for that 1 week in 2017 before the Saints. He got hurt. Missed almost the rest of the year, as it said, of one half of one game against the Bears. I mean, it's not a long-term commitment, but it's a commitment to a guy who has been alternately okay and injured over the course of his NFL career. So, do you see upside here for the Cardinals?
Yeah, I do. I thought that Sam Bradford, in that first week for Minnesota last year against the Saints, weird that that all worked out.
It does seem strange.
Yeah, that is strange. He was fantastic. He looked so comfortable in that Vikings offense. He looked like he was going to have a career season out of nowhere. And then I think, you know, that's the upside. But then the downside is that Sam Bradford didn't play again because of a mysterious knee injury that we never really found that much about.
Right.
It sort of disappeared for most of the year and then showed back up in the playoffs. I think, Bill, that maybe I'm wrong here, but to me it aligns, and since it's the same team, I think it kind of works. But the acquisition of Sam Bradford and the acquisition of Carson Palmer are reminiscent of each other to me, because you're talking about two former first round picks with knee injuries, who you were able to get in a bargain bin kind of way, although the Bradford contract sort of negates that, and acquire you know, as an upshot gamble because you aren't able to play in the deep water with Kirk Cousins and you're at a spot at 15 in the draft for Arizona where you don't know that you're going to get a quarterback. You know, they were in a similar spot last year and thought that – I think they thought that either Deshaun Watson or Patrick Mahomes could follow them and teams drifted ahead of them. And as a result, they're now in the precarious position of trusting Sam Bradford's knees to keep Mike Glennon off the field.
Yeah. I mean, that's I don't want to go at Mike Glennon, and this is not the time or place for that with you on the show. But yeah, I mean, that's what it is. That's where we're at this point. One more quarterback question for you, and then move on to the rest of the league. Josh McCown tweeted about how he signed his deal with the Jets at the drive-through line at a Chick-fil-A. So, Will, if you could sign a contract with CBS, whoever else, I don't know, you're a man in demand, you're a very successful writer. If you were signing a contract with someone in the line for a fast food establishment, which one would it be?
So it has to be fast food.
I mean, maybe are you going to like the Cheesecake Factory to get Cheesecake Factory to go? Are you waiting in that one of those parking spots by the restaurant? I'm flexible.
No, you're right. Fast food makes more sense because I'm not going to name some like small sushi spot in Raleigh that I go to. That would be.
If you're trying to get a sushi sponsorship in Raleigh, then maybe you are. I don't know. I leave it up to you.
I think it would probably be Chick-fil-A. That's. I mean, yeah, that's, we have a lot of them. I'm in the South. You know, not like they're not hard to find in the North anymore or out West, but you know, there's an abundance of Chick-fil-A's here. I think we have four or five in our city alone. And my son Robbie, who is 4 years old, is a big fan of Chick-fil-A's nuggets. And I'm a big fan of Chick-fil-A myself. So I would say Chick-fil-A, if it has to be fast, that would be my favorite fast food, and then probably Wendy's would be number two.
Interesting. That's a big difference, though. Wendy's a what is your Wendy's order? Is it chicken related?
Yeah, it would be a spicy chicken sandwich or two JBCs, junior bacon cheeseburgers. I'm not a fast food guy.
Sure.
I don't eat a lot of fast food, which is, I guess, good. I'm not
bad. It's probably good for you and bad for show content, I suppose. Let's get to a couple more offensive guys before the break here. The wide receiver market, certainly crazier than I think I was expecting. And granted, you figured, okay, well, Allen Robinson's going to get a big deal. He went to the Bears. Makes a lot of sense. I was a little surprised to see Sammy Watkins get not only a bigger deal than Allen Robinson, but I would say an enormous deal from the Kansas City Chiefs. 3 years, $48 million, $30 million guaranteed. What do you think about the fit of Watkins with Patrick Mahomes, who you just mentioned, in Kansas City?
Well, in a vacuum as a talent, and I think Sammy Watkins is an elite talent, I like the addition, especially as it relates to shifts Tyreek Hill out of a number one wide receiver mold and sort of puts him back where he was or where he's best fit, which I think is, you know, as a guy just a pest and traveling around and it not necessarily can't be the focus of a defense. It's going to allow Travis Kelce to open up the seam. Watkins is pretty good in the screen game too. You know, he's explosive down the field and that helps with Mahomes' big arm, but he can take, you know, short passes. They had a ton of these at Clemson, and you can take these short passes for big gains. And so with Albert Wilson leaving for Miami, you would have to anticipate that in this Andy Reid offense, you can picture plenty of screens going to either Tyreek Hill or Sammy Watkins and those being extremely dangerous. But from a financial standpoint, this is pretty crazy, Bill. I mean, you know, this is a guy that was, you know, traded up and taken fourth overall. The Bills gave up two first-round picks to take him, basically. He played for them for 3 years before they traded him to the Rams, who gave up a second-round pick for him.
Yeah.
He was the second-best ex-Buffalo Bills wide receiver on the Rams last year, which is a concern.
Yes.
And he only has one season over 60 catches. Or two seasons of over 60 catches, excuse me, and one season over 1,000 yards. And I think when you look at Andy Reid's history of paying wide receivers in Kansas City, it has not gone particularly well.
Right.
Dwayne Bowe, he paid, who was already on the roster his first year when he took over, so they could franchise tag Brandon Albert. And then they paid Jeremy Maclin a massive sum in free agency, and Maclin didn't last very long. This has a lot of bust factor to it for Kansas City, I think.
Oh, it's definitely higher risk and higher reward than just about any other free agent signing this offseason. But, I mean, you know, there was a stretch in 2015 where he was genuinely great. But, of course, a broken foot in 2016 required two surgeries. Just has not been the same guy since. So I'm really intrigued. I do think it's more than I would have paid. I understand wanting Watkins. I think it's a, you know, like you said, the upside there is a legitimate number one receiver, which is hard to find at age 24. But they were able to get it. I, you know, and I think the other side of it is if you look at the other contracts that came out in free agency, would you rather have Watkins making $16 million a year, or would you rather be the Miami Dolphins and paying Albert Wilson and Danny Amendola a combined $14 million a year?
Well, I could have stopped you at Dolphins there. would you rather be the Miami Dolphins? No.
No.
I don't know what the Dolphins are doing, Bill.
It's the culture.
I'll take some bad culture for over a $22 million cap hit.
Yeah.
In dead space for a guy that we signed for $114 million, you know, 2 years ago. Ryan Wilson wrote at the time, and you probably did too, I think a lot of people did, but that the Ndamukong Suh signing could come back to haunt the Dolphins, and it is coming back to haunt the Dolphins right now. You know, then they're in the position where they have Jarvis Landry as a, you know, $16 million franchise tag candidate, which is a terrible idea. Mm-hmm. They get lucky enough that the Browns are willing to trade for him, and then they go back out and they sign two more slot guys for $14 million. So I'm with you. I don't get why you wouldn't try and go get an elite wide receiver. I mean, I sort of like the weapons they have in a broader sense in the terms of Devontae Parker and Kenny Stills and Danny Amendola and Albert Wilson and Kenyon Drake. Like, I like those guys, but they have a lot committed in terms of draft investment or free agency or trades to their skill position guys, and I don't know that they necessarily have one elite player.
Right. Yeah, I think that's the concern there is that, you know, I mean, in a vacuum, outside of these moves, which I think make little sense beyond improving the culture, which we'll get to, but you know, you can understand, okay, Kenny Stills is a useful player. You want him on your roster. Devontae Parker is a useful player. You know, has some upside. You want him on your roster. Danny Amendola, very effective at times for the Patriots. You'd want him on your roster. But price tag matters. And Kenny Stills at $8 million a year, that's a real stretch. Danny Amendola at $6 million a year with 8.25 guaranteed, that's a real stretch. Albert Wilson at $8 million a year, like at no point has anyone thought, you know, Albert Wilson is a breakout player here. I mean, and I understand wanting to improve your team's culture. There's value in that. And whatever extent the Dolphins had a bad culture, it's impossible to say. I will say they traded Jay Ajayi under that aegis, and he didn't seem to impact the Eagles' culture all that much in terms of dragging them down. But let's just say the culture does matter and is a problem. You don't have to pay $8 million a year to improve your team's culture. You can sign a guy who's not going to make that much, who's going to improve the culture without necessarily being an $8 million a year third wideout or a $6 million a year fourth wideout. So I have to admit, I'm pretty skeptical of the moves the Dolphins made. I love the Josh Siddon signing. I think that was a position of need for them at guard, but major question marks there. We didn't get to the Allen Robinson signing, and I think that's the one I was actually really fondest of in terms of giving Mitch Trubisky a number one receiver in Chicago.
Yeah, no, I agree, and I don't know if I totally and completely trust what Ryan Pace is doing, mainly because, and I just think the process, he's gotten the Mitchell Trubisky thing, if Trubisky is indeed a franchise quarterback, mm-hmm. was a very good result. I didn't like the process of acquiring him.
Sure.
I didn't love the idea that they were going to tag or use the transition tag on Kyle Fuller, but unless I missed something, I don't think he's actually gotten any offers, so maybe they gambled right.
Yep.
I do like the concept of what they appear to be doing, which is following the blueprint of the Eagles and the Rams, and I think it mostly mirrors the Rams. Mm-hmm. You draft a quarterback high, you fire your stodgy conservative coach. I mean, Jeff Fisher and John Fox are a mustache away from being built from the same, you know, cookie cutter. And then you hire a young, bright mind and mm-hmm. an offensive coordinator, you know, who's worked under well-respected coaches and has a good pedigree, who can come in and develop your young quarterback. And then, you know, most importantly, you have to surround that quarterback with weapons. And the Rams did a really good job with that got Watkins in the trade. What didn't work out great, but the Robert Woods was fantastic. They added Cooper Kupp. Mm-hmm. Had Todd Gurley in place already, just like the Bears have Jordan Howard. Yep. And so I think you see a very similar pattern in terms of getting Allen Robinson. And look, Allen Robinson had a 1,400-yard season and led the league in touchdowns at the age of 22 while catching footballs from Blake Bortles. There is a ton of upside to this guy, and even if he's coming off an ACL and the Jaguars for some reason didn't want him or he didn't want the Jaguars, I like the gamble here by Ryan Pace, and it seems like a guy, if he comes out and plays well his first year or his first 2 years, then you can go on and extend him, and he's going to be happy there because I think he's from Detroit, so it's near his home, and he's got a young quarterback there in theory who he can grow with.
Yeah, I mean, he already said he wants to play the rest of his career in Chicago after signing there. So, I mean, there's certainly that opportunity. Big deals for the other guys they added. I'm not as thrilled about those contracts, I have to admit. Taylor Gabriel, 4 years, $26 million, $14 million guaranteed. Just a guy who I think, looked really good for a half of a season last year with the Falcons. But, of course, in 2016 with the Falcons. But, again, this is a guy who, when he hit the waiver wire, the Bears could have had him for nothing 2 years ago and were not interested. So the fact that they think he's worth $6.5 million a year when he was not very effective last season, I find a little troubling. And Trey Burden, someone who I loved, I figured, okay, I think a lot of teams are going to be in on him. I think he should get number one tight end money. He's getting number three tight end money because he's now the third highest paid tight end in football. 4 years, $32 million. $8 million annual average, $22 million in guarantees. He makes $24.7 million over his first 3 years, which I believe is the second highest three-year money for tight ends in the league. And he makes more money over the next 3 years than Zach Ertz, which I was not expecting, I have to admit.
Yeah, that's a little questionable. And I think that Does that include Jimmy Graham, or does Jimmy Graham bump him down? I bet
you're right. Jimmy Graham is number one, and then Charles Clay number two, and then it is Trey Burden number three. Always looking at
Charles Clay number two. What a world! Yes. I think that, yeah. And the other thing I have a question about with Trey Burden is, use a high draft pick on Adam Shaheen, who is, considered a baby Gronk type, just like Zach Ertz. So does this mean that what's happening here? Is Trey Burton supposed to be a compliment to the Ertz that you already theoretically have and used a high draft pick on? Because if that's the case, you're really overpaid for him. Or are you already admitting that your weapon that you spent high draft capital on might not be working? Mm-hmm. We knew Trey Burton was going to get paid. That is the Bears took their cap space and they decided to focus on improving the pieces around Mitchell Trubisky, and they spent a lot on it. I'm with you on the signings. I thought the Burton thing was high, but I do like getting a guy with upside.
Yep.
Goodness knows, maybe should have. I don't know. That's an expensive proposition if Trey Burton does. If Trey Burton is Charles Clay, instead of Zach Ertz or Travis Kelce, then that's a very big mistake.
Yeah, I mean, you're paying him like he's going to be a Pro Bowl tight end, which maybe he will be. That's not out of the question. I think he's a very talented player. But again, you're paying him hoping he's going to be the guy where the best case scenario is how it works out. And that usually tends to go poorly in the NFL. I'm not going to say that it works out poorly for Trey Burton. It could certainly be the next, like, Delanie Walker, where he gets that number one role and plays like a number one tight end. But it's just very risky. We'll get to break with this. They also signed Chase Daniel, who gets $7 million guaranteed. I'm so jealous of Chase Daniel. I'm so proud of him. What a life he's living in the NFL.
He's living right. And I think a genuinely nice guy, too. He's sort of like Sage Rosenfeld. Not Sage Rosenfeld, excuse me. Jim. He's like Jim Sorgi. He's a traveling Jim Sorgi. A richer traveling Jim Sorgi who, pops in spot to spot, doesn't make any noise, doesn't bother anybody. I'm not here to disrupt your depth chart. I'm just here to collect $7 million. What a good life that is. I'm with you. He's got it. And credit to him for, developing this, reputation as a great backup who also manages to land on spots where he never has to play. I mean, it's incredible. I saw, and I don't remember who it was, and I don't want to call him out incorrectly, but I think somebody mentioned, he could be this year's Nick Foles. Well, yes, I mean, he got paid a lot, and if the Bears do make, you know, do win the NFC North and do make a Super Bowl run, Chase Daniels would be a very nice insurance option to have. Feels like a bit of a luxury for a team on a rebuild to go out and spend huge on a backup quarterback.
I mean, he could be. It's certainly possible he could be. He could also just be bad. We don't know. He's thrown like 80 passes in the NFL, and he's made, after this contract, he'll be in line to make a minimum of $31 million, most likely $34 million. And he might be terrible.
It's amazing. I mean, like, is he the Kaiser Soze of quarterback? do we know that he's real? I mean, has anyone?
He could be a hologram. He could still be teaching at Mizzou and be a hologram in the NFL. It would be equally as, he would have equally as much purpose, as holding a clipboard. But
his agent?
He doesn't have an agent listed on SpotTrack. He could be doing this all himself.
My God. He's a genius. I mean, he's just an incredible genius. Chase Daniel he's basically the Bill Gates of our time. I've compared him to Bill Gates, Kaiser Soze, and Jim Sorge. So good job on me.
All right. We have to get to a break before we get any more Jim Sorge references. And we'll come back with more of Will Barnwell's show here in a moment. First, guys, of course, the NCAA tournament is currently going on. And if you're a fan of a team that did not lose in their conference final, as my Northeastern Huskies did, you probably want to go check out your team play in the first and second round of the tournament, or possibly, if they advance, go to the Sweet 16 even further. So, whether you're going to Atlanta, Charlotte, Detroit, San Diego, Nashville, I think those are most of the places where the first couple rounds are, Boise, who knew, Boise, Dallas, Wichita, all those places, if you happen to be near one of those cities and want to go check out your favorite team play, well, you're going to need to buy tickets, and to buy those tickets, you can check out our partners at SeatGeek, because SeatGeek will aggregate tickets from all over the web. They'll use their deal score technology. They'll rate them so you know you're getting a good deal, and then you're going to get reliable tickets so you can go check out your team, hopefully advance deep into the NCAA tournament. And even better, if you haven't used SeatGeek before, I have a deal for you. I'm not just telling you to go there for the sake of going there, because anyone can do that. Why not get $20 off your first purchase when you go to SeatGeek and use it for the first time? So download that SeatGeek app, enter in my promo code, which is my last name, Barnwell, B-A-R-N-W-E-L-L, right there on the name of the podcast. Really hard to misspell it, but just in case, again, B-A-R-N-W-E-L-L. Download the SeatGeek app, enter in my promo code, and get $20 off your first SeatGeek purchase today. Welcome back to the Bill Barnwell Show. I'm Bill Barnwell of ESPN, joined again here by Will Brinson of CBS. We are breaking down free agency. We got to a lot of these skill position players before the break. Let's get to some of the non-skill position guys. Let's talk about the offensive linemen. Let's get to that element of the NFL. And two enormous contracts came out early in the free agent period. One was a surprise in destination. Andrew Norwell had been long linked to the New York Giants as a former Dave Gettleman product in Carolina. Ended up not going that way. Ended up going, of all places, to the Jacksonville Jaguars, who had some money freed up. Well, actually, no, they didn't have money freed up because they used their Allen Robinson money on Dante Moncrief and Marquise Lee, but had some cap space after the Blake Bortles restructure. Used that to add, I think, by consensus, the best offensive lineman available in free agency. First team All-Pro this year. 5 years, $66.5 million and $30 million guaranteed. You think that's a logical place for the Jags to spend?
No. I would have taken the money and not redone Blake Bortles and chased after Kirk Cousins if it were me. But in the sense of, well, okay. I guess it is logical in the sense that Jacksonville wants to be a physical, run the ball, protect our quarterback from, you know, having to throw to $10 million Dante Moncrief too much. And in that sense, Andrew Norwell is a nice signing. And Leonard Fournette is a winner in free agency because he's going to have, you know, the Jaguars ran him into the middle of the offensive line quite frequently last year. I mean, his little next-gen stats charts would always, it'd just be like, it'd be like if you handed a toddler a red crayon and told him to, you know, draw zigzags. Like, it's just tiny little lines right into the middle. And I think Norwell is a physical guy up front who can help create holes and help to establish that run game. But, and I'll credit Pete Prisco this, my colleague at CBS, for saying this, and I'm surprised that Pete said it. You wouldn't think it. an old gray hair would think this, but is that a sustainable way to play football in 2018?
Yep.
And I don't know if that's the answer. Pete also pointed out that the Jaguars lost like two games, and I'll be interested to see where this all ranks when Football Outsiders does their adjusted games lost. But, you know, the Jaguars were really healthy on defense last year.
Yep.
And if you don't get that same luck on in terms of health and performance from your defense, and if your run game, for whatever reason, stalls out, then you're just a bad football team with Blake Bortles.
I mean, yeah, that could happen. And certainly the defense will not be as healthy. Not only did they were they incredibly healthy, but their backups were healthy. Aaron Colvin, who was their slot cornerback, was healthy. Pulpas Lucy, their backup line, their strong side linebacker, was healthy. And those guys are gone. Colvin left for the Texans. Pulpas Lucy retired. They're not going to be as deep this year. So when they do have injuries, those guys are not going to be as effective coming in and playing meaningful roles. So I would be concerned about that. And I think just the problem is, what story are you telling about your team? Because if it's, we want to run the football, we're going to play great defense, we don't need to throw the ball a ton, okay, that's fine, that's a reasonable plan, but then why are you giving Dante Moncrief $7 million when you have Keelan Cole and DeeDee Westbrook playing well? Why are you paying Blake Bortles on a multi-year deal if you're not going to rely on him to throw the football a ton? So I think you kind of have to pick one story or the other and stick with it in terms of building your roster.
Yeah, and the wide receiver thing is weird to me. I get Jaguars fans blasted me when I
said,
"Yeah, they're low key the saltiest fan base in the country, and a little dabble into the pool of success has made them even salty." And I even like the Jaguars. I grew up going to Jaguars games because my grandfather was one of the original season ticket holders.
Really?
I digress. The issue I had with their wide receiver approach, and maybe Allen Robinson didn't want to be there, but the money that you spent, like the whole thing with Allen Robinson was, okay, we can move on because we have these younger talents already on the roster.
Yep.
And so then to go out and spend the way that they did, to me, doesn't make a lot of sense. Like Allen Robinson has more upside than Dante Moncrief, and sure, granted, he's more and they're the same age, but Allen Robinson has the production, has the upside, and you know what he's got because he's been there. So I was just surprised at the allocation in the wide receiver market from that standpoint. I get the Norwell is a good player, but he was found as an undrafted free agent, and he fits what they want to do. I just don't know that what they want to do can guarantee you success in 2018.
Yeah. The other big signing along the offensive line, Nate Solder, who I think people, at least I figured, okay, well, he's going to hit free agency and then going to get a couple offers and he's going to go back to the Patriots. Just seems like that's what happens with Patriots free agents when they want to keep somebody. And it seemed like, given that they had very few options at tackle, they were going to want to keep Nate Solder. Well, the way you beat that is to offer him more money than any other tackle in football. And that's what happened with the New York Giants, who struck out on Norwell, paid Solder a massive premium to come play for the team. 4 years, $62 million, $34.8 million guaranteed at signing a deal where he gets, I believe the number is $48 million over his first 3 years. Biggest deal before that to this point, $42.3 million for Trent Williams. So an enormous leap forward in the tackle market, really paid a substantial premium to get Solder come play. And I don't believe he's even made a Pro Bowl over the course of his career. Certainly a good player, but worth the money?
Yeah, it's. I would say that they overpaid for him. They were going to have to overpay for him because of the New England factor that you pointed out and the success that you go back and enjoy in New England, even if you're taking a little bit less money. Mm-hmm. And because in 2018, Bill, offensive linemen are at a premium because we as in the NFL, everyone has just had a difficult time developing them out of college. I think it was probably born out of Joe Thomas who retired, but the idea that you could plug and play a first round tackle and be fine with it, you know, out of the gates is just a myth now. And it doesn't happen very often. I think Quentin Nelson is an exception to the rule. And I'll be very interested if Quentin Nelson doesn't go number two overall to the Giants, because I think what this Nate Solder thing tells us about the Giants, having, you know, followed Dave Gettleman fairly closely, you know, in Carolina for several years, he doesn't, you know, I mean, he doesn't, like any GM, he doesn't tell you the truth completely. He doesn't hide what he's doing, though.
Right.
He makes very clear what he's doing. And if you read You don't have to read between the lines. Just read the line. Dave Bellamy is telling everybody that he believes the Giants can be competitive in 2018 mm-hmm. and that he's going to not draft a quarterback at number two, that he's either going to take Saquon Barkley or Quentin Nelson, and that he is going to give Eli Manning some protection up front. Yeah. He's going to get Eric Flowers out of the left tackle spot. You know, he's got his blind side figured out, and I think he thinks he can get a guy like Quentin Nelson at number two. I don't think he wants to trade down. He mm-hmm. poo-pooed the idea of going away from the blue chip guys. I think he'd rather get one of those guys and try and be competitive. All the moves he's made this offseason, the trade for Alec Ogletree, the signing of Nate Solder, the signing of Jonathan Stewart, an expensive deal for him given his production in years. But all of those moves indicate a GM who is attempting to get his team in the playoff race after a miserable season in 2017.
Yeah. I mean, it does seem like that is that's a logic there. And maybe it could work. I think there are a lot more holes in that team than perhaps Dave Gettleman is suggesting. I think it's going to take a lot of things to go right, but who knows? Maybe they just quit on Ben McAdoo and they needed to protect Eli, which granted that offensive line was a disaster, but they also lost at least one offensive lineman already in having Weston Richburg go to the 49ers, which seemed like they weren't prepared to do. They had re-signed Daniel Kilgore, then they signed Weston Richburg, trade Kilgore to the Dolphins, who ended up cutting Mike Pouncey. Richburg gets a 5-year, $47.5 million deal, and it seems like the plan in San Francisco is to go out and get their Alex Mack and get their Devontae Freeman, because they signed Weston Richburg and then give a massive deal. Truly unexpected. I think the biggest surprise so far of free agency to me, Jerick McKinnon, 4 years, $30 million, $15.7 million guaranteed, $10.5 million in 2018. I did not see this one coming, I have to admit. I don't know. Did you?
No, nobody. No. Actually, I will say that Jason LaConfora on our CBS Sports Pick 6 podcast, we did a agency preview, and I'll credit JLC because he said, look, the guy that I think is going to get a monster deal that nobody's talking about is Jerick McKinnon. And I was like, he's going to get Deion Lewis money. And Jerick McKinnon in the year of our Lord 2018 is the fourth highest paid running back in the NFL. What is going on here? I don't want to hate on the deal because I like the fit and I like the player and I like the idea of him and what he does. You point out that basically the Tevin Coleman for Kyle Shanahan's offense, but this is the second year in a row where the 49ers have overpaid for guys, or at least I think they have paid above market prices for guys who may have a difficult time really making maximizing the impact. I mean, look, it's Le'Veon Bell if you want to do it by average per year, it's Le'Veon Bell at 14.5 with the franchise tag, Devonta Freeman at 8.2, LeSean McCoy at 8 even, and Jerick McKinnon at 7.5. I mean, and then we start to see these rookie, these rookie wage scale deals. It's crazy to me that they are giving Jerick McKinnon top five running back money when I don't think that even Jerick McKinnon's own family would say that he's a top five running back.
Yeah, I mean, if you look at the first 3 years of the deal, LeSean McCoy's $27.3 million, Leonard Fournette on a rookie deal, $22.9 million, and then Jerick McKinnon, $22.8 million. And I think there are a couple of things in play here, because it's not that Jerick McKinnon's a bad player. I think he's fine. He has not been a very good running back. He's not been a very good rusher during his time in Minnesota. I think he was 50th in terms out of 51 backs in terms of first down percentage over the last 2 years. But, okay, let's say he's going to be a solid running back. This is an offense where the Shanahans for 30 years now have been finding running backs for cheap, sticking in their offense, and having successful seasons out of them. So when Kyle Shanahan was in Atlanta, he had two very talented running backs in Devontae Freeman and Tevin Coleman. They were both mid-round picks on rookie deals. So I don't understand why you think you have to pay Jerick McKinnon almost $8 million a year when you don't think you can get that production from someone in the draft or someone on cheap, someone who you think you can sign for cheap who's going to play a meaningful role. Joe Williams, who you went to bat for last year, who hasn't played yet. Dion Lewis, who I think would have been very happy to take this contract. I understand the logic of, well, we're going to use him in different ways. He's going to be more productive than just a pure running back, but you're not negotiating against teams who see that. It's like seeing a house. Let's say the house is worth $400,000. And you say, okay, well, I'm going to use it as a home office, so I don't have to pay for rent for my office. It's worth $600,000 to me. I'm going to bid $600,000. That's not how valuing things work. Like, it's still worth $400,000, even if you're going to use it in a different way. So you don't have to bid $600,000. You can bid $450,000 and still pay a premium and get it. I can't imagine that. Like you said, if someone offered Jerick McKinnon the Dion Lewis deal, 4 years, $19.8 million. I can't see someone topping that, and I can't see him saying no. So it's not that, like, that extra, you know, $5 or $6 million is going to be the difference between the Niners winning and losing, but it is a sign of just how they're valuing players, where they're getting stuck on one guy, saying this is the one guy who's going to improve our team, not just a range of guys, and then going out and paying more than anyone else in the league thinks. And it's happened now with Jerick McKinnon, it's happened with Kyle Juszczyk, it's happened with Malcolm Smith, who missed all last season. And Juszczyk made the Pro Bowl, but he was not a helpful player for that team last year. He really did not move the needle all, and the numbers say he was pretty mediocre in terms of how fullbacks go. So again, not something wrong with the players, they're all useful in their own way, but you need to trust your ability to scout and develop, and you need to trust your ability to find guys in the draft and find guys for cheap. And it just seems like the Niners, well, they just don't have that at this point of their development cycle under John Lynch and Kyle Shanahan.
Yeah, and it's, well, and the weird thing is, I mean, Matt Breida was the guy who was an undrafted free agent last year out of Georgia Southern, and they gave him 105 carries, and he averaged 4.4 yards per carry. I would have liked to have seen him, you know, give him a full, I mean, I'm not saying he's a great running back, but I mean, maybe, I mean, call, give him some carries, see how he does. Cause I think the Niners are fooling themselves a little bit if they think they're really that close to, like, I think they're doing the right things in terms of, you know, they got Jimmy G and it turned it around. I mean, I think that the 49ers are being severely overrated by the offseason hype and the close of 2017. And I tend to think if their over under is 9 wins, then I'm probably going to lean towards the under, and or if it, even if it's 8, that's a big jump to take, even with the way that Jimmy Garoppolo played. Now, again, with Breida, I mean, call your dad and say, hey, Dad, look at this draft class. It's a loaded running back draft class. Look at this draft class and tell me who's going to, you know, who would be good in the system. You know, oh, let's sit down and look at all the running backs, and Kyle and Mike could figure it out and find a running back. I mean, I would rather use a high second round pick on somebody like Ronald Jones.
Yeah.
Or even, you know, I mean, maybe Darius Geis goes in the first round, but you have to trade up to get him, then to allocate that sort of salary cap space and that sort of cost to a guy like Jerick McKinnon, who is not going to be a, you know, he'll be involved, but he's not necessarily a fundamental aspect of your game in terms of being the workhorse.
Yeah, and I mean, it's not like they're in a rush. These are guys with, what, six-year contracts? I mean, they're entering year two. They're going to be fine. Jimmy Garoppolo's not going anywhere. They're not getting fired. It's not like they are one running back away from winning the Super Bowl. And let me ask you, Will, who would you say is the best running back in terms of being a receiving back in football right now?
I guess, you know, if I had to pick one guy who was decent at catching the ball, and if we narrowed it down to guys who were playing on a franchise tag and desperately looking for huge contracts, maybe Le'Veon, I don't know. I mean, okay. Maybe so Le'Veon Bell.
When was Le'Veon, he was drafted, Le'Veon Bell was drafted in the middle of the second round.
Yes.
Okay, who's the second best receiving back in football?
I actually don't know the answer to that. I don't have a sarcastic answer ready. LeSean McCoy, right?
Maybe. LeSean McCoy. When was he drafted?
I think he was drafted in the third round. Well,
late second round. Well, who's the third best receiving back in football?
Giovanni Bernard. Just kidding. Dion Lewis.
When was Dion Lewis drafted?
He was undrafted. No, he was the fifth round by the Eagles.
Fifth round pick. I'll give you some more names. David Johnson was a third round pick. Alvin Kamara was a third round pick. Duke Johnson, quietly very good, third round pick. Devontae Freeman, fourth round pick. James White, fourth round pick. You go ahead, I'm saying. Chris Thompson's a fifth round pick. Todd Gurley maybe is the exception to the rule, where he was a top 10 pick, ended up being a big receiving back. Christian McCaffrey, you figure, will play a big role. And I think those guys are underrated, and I think they should be drafted higher. But you don't have to pay a premium to find these guys. You can get them for relatively cheap. And so, Miners, I mean, go ahead, you know, make that signing. I don't think he's going to be a bad player by any means. But again, if he comes out next year and he has a 1,200 combined yard season, that's not going to be making up for what they're paying him. He has to be an all-pro caliber running back. And there has never been a point in his career where Jerick McKinnon has come close to looking like an all-pro running back. So we'll see what happens. Certainly, I think he'll do fine there. But I think they're paying an enormous premium for just fine.
Yeah, the move that you should make, and I said Ronald Jones and Darius Geis, the guy that I didn't think about at the time when we were talking, but the guy who makes sense is Sony Michel out of Georgia.
Yep.
He's not going to go in the first round, right? You know that. And so let's say you want to be aggressive and get him, and you want to use your second round pick, which actually I guess the 49ers traded their second round pick, but whatever. Jimmy Garoppolo worked out pretty well for him. But the point being is, use a higher pick than you need to on somebody like Sony Michel. And if he busts on a rookie wage scale deal, and you don't get burnt for it in terms of salary cap space. If you spend huge on Jerick McKinnon and he busts, you know, you're getting bit doubly, because you ended up in a position where you overpaid for a running back in free agency and you allocated your resources ineffectively. Mm-hmm. I think the other thing too with this whole, and this is going to come back the other way at some point. When Trent Richardson went third overall in 2012 and was a terrible choice and was a bust for both, he was okay with the Browns and then a bust for the Colts. Mm-hmm. I think we saw a period where there was even more value in running backs, because these guys started falling because teams were scared of using a high pick on a running back. Yep. And it not working out. We've seen a reverse of that, thanks to Todd Gurley going as a top 10 back, performing well. Zeke Elliott going in the top 5 and performing well. Leonard Fournette going in the top 5 and performing pretty well. And we're going to see Saquon Barkley probably go in the top 5 picks here. I guess he could potentially even fall to the 49ers. But at some point, one of these guys who comes out as a highly regarded running back is going to not work out. And I think it's going to head the other way. And there's just value at the running back position late. Alvin Kamara, you mentioned all those guys who were taken late. Alvin Kamara and Kareem Hunt would be pretty nice additions onto the 49ers roster, and they were cheap.
Yeah, I mean, you might want to prefer those guys to Leonard Fournette last year. You might prefer, if you're the Cowboys, having taken Jalen Ramsey and drafting Jordan Howard later than you would have taken Ezekiel Elliott. I mean, that certainly seems like there's still guys who are developing into very talented players later in the draft. I'm realizing, as we get to the end of the show here, this is going to be an offense-only show. We didn't get to a single defensive player. Are there any other offensive contracts? Oh, Jimmy Graham. Let's get to Jimmy Graham. 3 years, $30 million to go play for the Green Bay Packers as a replacement, we discovered, for Jordy Nelson, who signed a two-year, $15 million deal with the Raiders. So let me ask you, Will, a year from now, who do you think is happier, the Raiders with Jordy Nelson or the Packers with Jimmy Graham?
I think it's going to be the Raiders.
Interesting.
So Jordy Nelson led the league in touchdowns in 2016, coming off of ACL surgery. And I know he didn't look great last year, and he's a declining, he's in a declining phase in his age in terms of being a football player. But I think that he's going to provide more value to the Raiders. I don't know how huge of an upgrade he'll be. Jimmy Graham is going to be a bigger upgrade over what the Packers had at tight end, certainly. Yes. Martellus Bennett. Then Jordy Nelson will be over Michael Crabtree, but I expect the Raiders to get more value out of Jordy Nelson than the Packers get out of Jimmy Graham. And I think, as good as Jimmy Graham can be in the red zone, Bill, if he doesn't work out and yeah. Jordy Nelson plays well in Oakland, you're going to have a very pissed off quarterback.
Yeah, that's the thing.
Can I say that? I can say that, right?
Yeah, of course. You can say quarterback on this show. It's fine. It's a football show.
He's going to be cheesed off. That's even better.
He's going to be peeved.
Yeah, well, cheesed for the Green Bay purposes.
Oh, I get it. Val, you're so smart. Well,
I mean, Aaron, you're trying to negotiate a Aaron Rodgers didn't go anywhere, right? Yeah. I mean, he's going to play for the Packers. We think, we're pretty sure. But if you're looking for him to, if you're looking to try and maybe squeeze a couple bucks out of him and get a deal done, cutting his best friend for salary cap reasons and then paying Jimmy Graham a ton of money, you know, Aaron Rodgers is the living embodiment right now of the reverse Alonzo Mourning gif. You know, sad, and he's all right. You know, like he's super happy about Jimmy Graham, and then all of a sudden it got yanked out from under him.
It really is crazy. And I mean, you know, you could say, okay, Jordy Nelson's number dropped off last year, and they did. He averaged 9.1 yards per reception, which is not great. That's a bad number. He did have 6 touchdowns in those first 5 games with Rodgers, and you know, okay, well, you figure he's probably taking a step backwards. Jimmy Graham, his profile was relatively similar. I mean, this is a guy who had 10 touchdowns last year in the red zone, but he averaged 9.1, the identical 9.1 yards per reception, down from 14.2 the previous year. So, I mean, if you're paying them both to be red zone threats, and you're thinking you're not going to get a lot of significant downfield yardage from either player, well, you'd figure, okay, Jimmy Graham's probably lost more of his athleticism than Jordy Nelson ever did, given that he suffered a more serious injury than Jordy Nelson. But also, you have Jordy Nelson for one more year, and then you can kind of decide if you want to go forward with him. You can maybe restructure his deal. You don't have to necessarily cut him. And Jimmy Graham, you're locked in for 2 more years at $10 million a year, most likely. So I have to admit I'm certainly skeptical of this move. I don't think Jordy Nelson's necessarily going to work out for the Raiders, but I don't know that Jimmy Graham's going to work out for the Packers either.
Yeah, I don't think either one to me, they're both quintessential early free agency moves involving big names who have been productive throughout their careers, but you're paying for past production with both of these guys. And there's a little bit of the fantasy football factor to it too. Yeah. I think, I think the fact that skill position guys get, you know, who put up huge numbers in modern times, and we talk about them, I mean, they get more run than other guys who do the dirty work. And Jimmy Graham was in Seattle. The Saints and Drew Brees and Sean Payton, who have a high-flying offense, traded Jimmy Graham. Won the trade, by the way, it turns out.
For sure.
Traded Jimmy Graham and got rid of him, a year removed from a 1,200-yard season where he led the league in touchdown catches. That should be a red flag. Mm-hmm. He didn't produce more than 923 yards in his time in Seattle. He had 16 touchdowns the last 2 years. But, I mean, a 57-catch, 520-yard, 10-touchdown season at the age of 31, you got to take the 10 touchdowns out of there. Those are, you know, touchdowns are not regression-proof. And if he, let's say he'd caught 5 touchdowns instead of 10 because he wasn't a big red zone threat, we would be looking at last year as a cliff that he fell off of, and with the potential for future decline, and you just paid him a lot over several years.
Yeah, that's the thing. If it was a one-year deal, I'd say, okay, well, you know, it's worth the risk. You get a great tight end for Aaron Rodgers. You don't have to commit to it in the long term. But, I mean, once we get the specifics of this deal and it's a $10 million guaranteed deal and he's out after 1 year, I have to think that's not the best deal I would have made. I certainly think that there would have been other opportunities for the Packers to expand. I don't know maybe I'd rather have Trey Burton at that money and sort of figure that he's going to be a guy who's going to continue to grow and develop as opposed to Jimmy Graham, who's on the decline. Oh, speaking of crazy moves, we didn't get to this one. Paul Richardson, speaking of Seahawks, 5 years, $40 million to go to Washington. I mean, what am I missing here? Well, why is Paul Richardson suddenly making $8 million a year?
This is exactly what the Redskins did with Pierre Garçon, right? When they signed him in free agency from the Colts, in terms of, Garçon had more production, I think, but it was just an out of nowhere Redskins spin big on a receiver. I feel like the Redskins are doing a little bit, Bill, of revenge shopping, mm-hmm. like trying to buy nice toys for your new girlfriend when your ex-wife is signed. You know, like oh, hey, look at this. Beautiful car I got her. Yeah, look at this, Kirk. This very nice Paul Richardson that I got her. It's $40 million. You know, it's like,
Wouldn't that be nice to have a Paul Richardson as opposed to an Adam Thielen and a Stephon Diggs?
Right? Yeah, exactly. It's like, yeah, enjoy your steakhouse in Minnesota, Kirk. I've got Paul Richardson and Alex here. I don't get the deal. I think there's a lot of upside to it, but you know, I think Daniel Jeremiah tweeted this out. It really does speak to the level or the lack thereof mm-hmm. of talent at the wide receiver position in the draft, because these teams are looking at it. They're not identifying guys. Even, you know, Calvin Ridley has some major questions coming out of the combine. They're not identifying a ton of guys who are going to be high picks. and impact players out of the gate, and as a result, they're overpaying for these receivers. You know, the other one that I think certainly is worth talking about, it's sort of unfolding as we're recording, but the Ryan Grant signing. I mean, the contract itself was insane, and then you really feel bad for Ryan Grant because it appears that the Ravens are going to back out of said deal by failing him on a physical, conveniently right after Michael Crabtree became available.
Interesting, huh? Does seem strange that they suddenly decided that this deal, which was widely panned and seemed desperate at the time, was suddenly a concern and prevented Ryan Grant from passing his physical once Michael Crabtree did become available. And versus for a guy who, does he have a serious injury history that not I'm really aware of?
I saw somebody sent out, J.P. Finley of NBC Washington retweeted it, so I'm not sure it's now, but it was a video of Grant suffering an injury, an ankle injury, in week 17 last year.
Okay.
But he proceeded to play the rest of the game. This is the ultimate football is it's the ultimate combination of football is a business, and business is stupid sometimes. You know, these free agency deals we see are just, you know, terrible deals. It was a very bizarre thing for Ozzie Newsome to be spearheading this, or even Eric DaCosta, you know, depending on who's running it. I mean, both guys are widely regarded as smart football minds to pay Ryan Grant that much in a market where, guys are getting overpaid, but, you know, you just don't have to give him that much. I mean, that's like paying $4 million for the $400,000 house you talked about earlier. It makes no sense, and I would expect that Ryan Grant ends up getting, you know, like a 2-year, $15 million deal, right? Mm-hmm. At best.
Yeah, he's going to go look at the Colts today, apparently, who you would presume maybe have a track record of not appreciating when people change their mind about offers. Maybe this could be their way of getting revenge on the Patriots somehow. By the way, that Washington Giants game from week 17 when Ryan Grant got hurt, that was a game that had a lot of players making a lot of plays who I have not thought about. Capri Bibbs had 100 yards from scrimmage on 20 touches in that game. Josh Doctson had 10 targets. A guy named H. Sharp caught a touchdown for the Giants, and I have never heard of H. Sharp before.
Sharp? Who is H. Sharp? Are you testing to see if I lie about stuff? Like I'm like, oh, I know who H. Sharp is. Never caught a touchdown. It really happened.
Eli was 10 of 28 for 132 yards. There are five different receivers. A guy named M. Bundy, who I've never heard of. Jarrell Adams, Shane Vereen, Wayne Gallman, Orleans Darkwa. No receptions on a combined 11 targets, which is pretty impressive when you have Paul Perkins to catch a pass. But I was wondering, it almost looked like Eli was 0 for his running backs and it went in that game and it came to throwing the football. But do you know who H. Sharp is? I've looked him up, but I did not know who he was before this point.
I'd be lying if I said I knew. I Googled him. It's Hunter, I'm assuming, undrafted free agent out of Utah State. Of course, I Googled it, so I'm reading right off my computer. But when Odell and Brandon Marshall and Sterling Shepard, all went down, you know, we saw this just influx of guys you really had to Google, even if you write about football for a living, onto the Giants roster. And maybe that's part of why Dave Gettleman believes he can make a push this year, because they were ravaged by injury on that offensive side of the ball last year.
Yeah, Darius Poe caught two passes. A guy named Khalif Raymond caught one pass. Holy Cross grad, Khalif Raymond, another Broncos product. Patriots really went after, the Giants really went after Broncos guys to improve the back of their wide receiving core. But a very strange Week 17 game there. But that's it. Will, we think we covered the offensive side of free agency. Always a pleasure to have you on. And where can people check out more of what you're working on?
People can check it out at cbssports.com and on Twitter at Will Brinson. And then we do the Pick 6 podcast on iTunes, which people can also check out. Always fun to hop on with you, Bill. Thanks for having me.
My pleasure.